everything you got. Play fast, play hard. Let's beat these boys tonight in their house.
It's party time. It's party time.
Dad, here we go.
Touchdown! You are listening to the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. Now here's your host, Brand Duffy.
That's right. Another week, another loss to break down as the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast continues. I'm Fran Duffy, and I think we've got a great show for you here on episode number 35. At the top of this week's show, as always, we've got Chalk Talk, where Greg Cosell and I look back, unfortunately, at Sunday's loss to Tampa Bay before looking forward to this Thanksgiving matchup with the Detroit Lions. Next up, we've got Two Technique, where former Eagles wide receiver Mike Quick makes his debut on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast, Mike Quick on beating press coverage. So make sure you stay tuned for that. And then lastly, we're wrapping it up with Saturday Scouting. No guests this week. Why? Because we're going into rivalry weekend here in college football. It's the last week of the regular season. So many big matchups for us to look at. And we're going to talk about it right here. Myself and my favorite guy in the room with the man with the plan, BT. Chris Stevens is not going to be a part of this conversation.
He is not.
No, he's not going to be part of it. But
No comments from
the peanut gallery is staying out of it. We've got a lot to talk about, though, BT. Obviously, a very tough loss this past week for the Eagles. You know, it's tough. And I've said this in a couple of different ways. I said it in my column on Monday night. I said it in on the Eagles Insider podcast. This game is going to come down to not as much the X's and O's and what the coaches can do from a game planning perspective. I think this comes down to the guys in the locker room rebounding from a loss like that. And then trying to come back together on a short turnaround. Everybody looks at the film and the players got to hold each other accountable and say, okay, now we got to turn things around.
I think they got to have a little pride, you know, just for the, like, you know, Malcolm said in the locker room after the game, that you got to have some pride for the name on your back, but also for what, you know, the name on the front. So
sure.
You represent the Eagles. You want to do well, obviously, but every guy's putting tape on, everybody's putting stuff on tape that's going to hurt them or help them going forward.
Yep.
So. They just need to rebound. I think, honestly, the best thing that could have happened was having a game on Thursday, because if you sat all week and had to deal with media and yada, yada, yada. So I think it's nice to get back on the ship and let's get a win in Detroit.
Yeah, Malcolm said it well. He said, you know, you are what your record says you are.
I totally believe that.
Right?
I hate when people are like, oh, we could have won that game.
Sure.
Or we could have, you know.
You are what your record says you are. Obviously, they've got the ability to turn it around. There's six games left for them to turn around. You are what you said you are, and every player is what they put on tape. I mean, that you are what you put on tape. And while we're talking about
the eye in the sky,
does not lie.
Does not lie.
And while we're on the topic, let's get into Chalk Talk with Greg Cosell.
Let's get down to business. It's time for Chalk Talk.
Joining me as he does each and every week here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast, NFL film senior producer Greg Cosell. And Greg, it's another week here in Philadelphia. A tough loss for the Eagles last week against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We both watched the game together on Sunday, and we don't need to go through both sides of the ball. We can both agree that there were issues on both sides for sure. You know, to be fair, overall, this is obviously going to be a very tough test. And I've said this a couple times. It's a very tough test, not necessarily, to me, in my mind, it's not as much about the coaches and the game plan this week against Detroit. It's more the guys in the locker room. How are they going to respond after seeing what they put on tape on Sunday? Can they all look each other in the eye and say, okay, we have to get this thing turned around and put our best effort out on the field on Thursday?
You know, it's funny you say that, because I've always felt that Thursday games
are
more about emotion, effort, and execution. And that might be cliched, but I think you don't have a lot of time to really do a ton of game planning.
Right.
Specific game planning for your opponent, especially if you're playing away, because the team will leave Wednesday.
Right. Yep.
You know,
no
so
question.
They really have 2 days. Now, coaches and others in the organization have been looking at Detroit probably for weeks, but the players haven't.
Right.
So you can only give them so much. So a game like this, particularly on the road, to me, is about the energy and effort that you start the game with, because you can't come out on the road and get behind, especially a team that has lost two games that I'm pretty sure every Philadelphia fan penciled in as wins.
Right, no question.
You know, two home games to Miami and Tampa. Miami, last week we talked about how that may have been the most disheartening loss in the Chip Kelly era. I'm not sure what we say now about the Tampa game at this point, but Thursday to me, clearly becomes a game where you must start fast, Fran, and that has not been the forte of this Philadelphia Eagles team.
No, it certainly hasn't. Well, let me ask you this question. You bring up a good point about the Thursday games, and just in generalities, you look around the league and you watch, obviously, every team on tape every week. Do you feel that looking at this Eagles offense, does that benefit more so the Eagles, or does it more so benefit the Lions in terms of the short week of prep and relying more so on the execution and the emotion of the game?
Well, you could make the argument. Now, we've all thought about the Eagles offense over these years under Chip as being a very difficult offense to defend because of the speed tempo. You could make an argument that it benefits the Eagles because the Lions don't defend this very often. Nobody really does in the league because no one does it the way Chip does. On the other hand, you look at the Eagles' track record this season, and with very few exceptions, that speed tempo offense has not been successful. But I think just if you look tactically and conceptually, you would say it could well benefit the Eagles because the Lions will have to get used to that tempo.
What would you say, and this is, I'm going to ask you two questions about this game against Tampa Bay, and we're going to start on the offense. What were, in your mind, was the number one issue? After watching the game, we watched it together on Sunday, what would you say was the number one issue in terms of not being able to get things going?
It's an interesting question because their first drive produced a touchdown.
Yep.
And it produced a touchdown because of the speed tempo.
Sure.
It was the Josh Huff touchdown. Right? That was the first one.
That was the first touchdown, yep.
And they kind of caught Tampa. I mean, when I say caught, it wasn't as if Tampa truly wasn't ready, but you could tell that the game was too fast for Tampa at that point.
Yep, and you caught them in a play in man coverage.
Right.
Slant flat. Yep.
Right. As we've discussed the Chip Kelly offense, we've talked about how it's an execution offense. It's not a scheme offense in the sense that they have a lot of different concepts that they try to run through. They have minimal concepts that they try to run fast. So it's really an execution offense. The one thing it's not is a matchup offense.
Right.
They're not really an offense that creates matchups for individual players.
Right. And that's what we've talked about in the past because fans want to know, why did they focus on Nelson Agholor? How come Nelson Agholor hasn't gotten the ball? Where's Jordan Matt?
Right.
Because that's not their focus. Their focus isn't to, say, get Nelson Agholor the football or get Jordan Matthews the football. Their focus is, we want to hit this number two crosser on this three-level stretch playoff boot action, or we want
right.
to hit this first inbreaker on the mesh. They focus it that
and
way.
And I think, look, that I talk over the years. I've talked to a ton of people in the NFL. I mean, I have these conversations pretty regularly. And in the offseason, I have a whole lot more of them. But I'm a football purist. I love the game conceptually and tactically. And I think that almost everyone would agree that the NFL, while there's great concepts and great schemes, and that's what coaches do, but there's a matchup element to the game. Very often you create schemes so that you get your big-time receiver matched against a corner that you feel he can win. So you create formations and concepts, pass game concepts, so you create a one-on-one. I think it's fair to say that that's not the Eagles' approach. And when you look at maybe their receivers, like you said, they don't think in terms of and we don't know yet what Nelson Agholor is. His year, unfortunately, has been a little bit cut short due to injury. Maybe he can come back now and kind of get into the flow.
Right.
So we don't know about certain players yet. But it seems from studying this offense that that's not really a foundation or a focus. And, you wonder if at some point, look, they're playing the Lions this week, okay? You look at their defense due to injury. When they're in their nickel, they've got Nigel Lawson playing on the outside.
Hmm. Yeah.
Okay? I mean, I watched him in college. I thought he was a nice player.
Right.
But he's short. He's a guy you can attack, in my opinion. They've got Quandre Diggs playing on the inside in the slot.
Another undersized guy.
Who's actually done okay, but he's another undersized guy.
Right.
You look at Jordan Matthews. Now, Jordan Matthews is not a burner. That's not his game. But he's, what is he, 6'2"?
Right.
Give or take.
Sure.
Good size, good body. You look at Jordan Matthews matched against Quandre Diggs at 5'9", I believe he is, something along those lines. And you think, you know what? Let's throw the ball to Jordan Matthews because theoretically he's open even when he's covered.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, I guess I would like to see some of that. And I think this game sets up as an opportunity to do that.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see. So now let's look defensively. And obviously this was an effort that we're not used to seeing from the Eagles defense.
No.
You know, you talk about the against the run, a number of huge gainers. You had the 84-yarder. There was a 50-plus yarder. And then there were just big chunks as well.
Yeah.
A lot of the unforced errors in terms of, you know, it's third and six. You jump off sides. Now it's third and one, and they get a 3-yard gain for a first down. A lot of things where, you know, either it was mistakes that you made or opportunities that Tampa Bay gave you, whether it was an underthrown pass that could have been intercepted, you know, different areas where Connor Barwin gets his hands up on third down.
Sure.
Knocks ball goes through his hands, and then, you know, maybe they score a touchdown next play. Things like that where, you know, things obviously just didn't – it was not the Eagles' defense's day. What kind of – how often do you see – I should say it's an interesting question. I'm trying to phrase it the right way. When you look at good defenses over the years, obviously every week, you know, any season, any good defense is bound to have a bad day. And they haven't had their best month of football past month. Do you see that teams, you know, good defenses are able to rebound from poor performances such as that? Or do you think overall that doesn't necessarily happen to good defenses?
I think good defenses do rebound, but I think that when you look at specific defenses.
Right, sure. And I realize this is a very
broad question.
Yes.
But I think ultimately you look at defensive personnel. I've always believed that teams on either side of the ball, if there is a theoretical weak link, and I don't mean that as a guy can't play, he stinks.
Right,
I'm just talking about an area that can be exploited.
Sure.
That I'm never surprised in any given week when that area is exploited because that's what the NFL is. That's what happens.
Right.
You know, if you have, you know, a great corner and your other corner isn't very good, I'm never surprised when a team exploits the not very good corner. You know, if you have a good pass rusher on the outside, but your inside linebackers are not very good, I'm never surprised when a team exploits the inside linebackers because that's what coaches do, and a lot of coaches in this league are pretty good.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that the Eagles' D-line had a poor game. I would expect them to rebound because there's too long a track record of playing at a pretty high level.
Exactly.
So I would not expect the D-line to play poorly. I think if I'm looking at this defense, the area that I think has struggled a bit since Jordan Hicks went out has been the inside linebacker position. You know, because obviously Alonzo has to play more snaps. I'm not sure he's really ready to play at the same level he played in Buffalo, and whether he ever is or not, only time will answer that. My guess is DeMeco Ryans is probably playing a few more snaps than they'd like him to play. I think Kendricks can be dynamic, and he certainly this past week showed that.
He certainly had his moments, yes, absolutely.
As he does every week. But I think overall, with Hicks gone, that they've struggled a bit in that area. The pass rush, you know, they did blitz 13 times on I believe it was 31 dropbacks. I believe it was Thurman who, you know.
Yep, had a sack fumble, sure.
You know, caused the sack fumble. So, you know, I think the response of a lot of fans is they just think, you know, we got no pressure on them. You know, we got a blitz. Well, they did blitz, you know, what, 13 out of 31 is what? It's probably over 40%. It wasn't as if they didn't attempt to pressure.
Right.
You know, so do I think they can rebound against Detroit? I do, but I also think Detroit presents some problems.
Sure, yeah. I wanted to ask the question just because I do feel, you know, I've said multiple times, I'm a big Billy Davis fan. This defensive line, I think, is one of the best in football. I think the secondary has improved leaps and bounds from where they were last year. I think that I would agree.
I don't think that, in all honesty, that Maxwell or Carroll had their best game this week.
I wouldn't say so, but I think that in terms of just where they were a year ago,
right.
I think that they're much further along. And I do think that, you know, you look at a play like the first touchdown that Nolan Carroll gave up to Mike Evans. I thought Nolan Carroll played that pretty much as well as you can ask a corner to play.
I mean, that's a 50-50 ball with a 6'4 receiver, and he made the catch.
Exactly.
That's not. I didn't look at a play like that and go, oh, my God, that's horrible corner play.
Right.
No.
I think that, you know, that these guys have come along. I'm excited to see them bounce back. I'm excited to see how these guys come out and play on Thursday.
Yeah, and like I said, Detroit's going to present a few problems because they have Calvin Johnson.
Yep.
You know, when they line up in 3-by-1 sets with three receivers to one side and Calvin Johnson is the single receiver, ex-ISO as we like to say, that presents a problem for every team.
Yeah.
How are you going to play that?
And not only sometimes as the ex-ISO, but also as number three.
Oh, he's in the slot, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
How about when Eric Ebron is split out?
Sure, exactly.
The tight end who runs like a wide receiver.
Right.
We saw last week, we saw a couple of weeks ago, they got burned when Lamar Miller ran by Michael Kendricks. We saw last week, they tried Charles Sims with that. There's two backs on Detroit who can do that, Theo Riddick and Abdullah. Abdullah actually ran by Ben Heaney of Oakland on Sunday, and Stafford just overthrew him. It would have been should have been an easy touchdown.
Yeah,
I don't know if you saw that play.
I did, yes.
You know, it should have been an easy touchdown. So, you know, there's certain matchups that the Lions present to a team that likes to play a lot of man in the Eagles that are I don't want to say they're problematic, but I mean that you have to defend.
They're problematic for anybody.
right. Yeah. You have to defend.
Yeah. Theo Riddick, I've been very, very impressed. And obviously,
he's a really good receiver.
He played receiver in college at Notre Dame.
He went to Notre Dame as a receiver.
Absolutely. And he just has the ability to get in and out of breaks so quickly.
And his good run after catch.
Oh, man. He is phenomenal.
Yeah.
And so he's absolutely going to present a problem. I wanted to ask you about just overall what you've seen from Matthew Stafford over the course of the season. A lot of people have been very down on him. He got benched at one point this year. What were your thoughts on Stafford after, you know, now we're 10, 11 weeks into the season?
Yeah. I thought watching the tape from this past week against Oakland, it might have been his most controlled performance. And I think that's what you walk a fine line with quarterbacks like Stafford, who from the time he was in high school going to Georgia was – people said he'll be the number one pick in a draft because he was such a tremendous arm talent, which he still is. And, of course, he was a number one pick in a draft. He's got a certain mentality, which he's probably had ever since he started throwing a ball, because I'm sure from the time he was 8 years old, no one threw a ball like Matthew Stafford,
right?
You know, in his community. So you walk a really fine line between channeling his outstanding ability to deliver a football, but then taking away from the fact that you don't want him to play cautious. So you walk a really fine line, and many times he's crossed the line into the bad part where he forces balls, he tries to make throws that are not there, he throws with bad technique and poor discipline. You know, he walks a very fine line.
It's funny because I feel like everything you just said could have been said about Brett Favre 10 years ago, 15 years ago.
Correct. To some degree.
Sure.
To some degree.
Yeah, it's interesting. Watch that.
I mean, it's funny you mentioned Brett Favre, because I've had people who played with Favre tell me that if it wasn't for Mike Holmgren, who's really stuck his thumb on Favre, that Favre would not have been a great quarterback. Now, people can say, oh, of course he would have been. You know, these are people who are on the team.
Right.
So they were there. You know, so does Stafford have a Mike Holmgren type guy? Because Holmgren, I know Mike Holmgren and have numerous conversations with him over the years, and, you know, he's a bit of a hard guy when it comes to, you know, he doesn't care if you're Brett Favre.
Sure.
He coaches you, you know. So, I don't know the situation in Detroit. I do know that Matthew Stafford can make unbelievable throws and is willing to turn it loose at any time.
When you look at this pass game, and obviously, you know, they've made some changes there offensively in terms of the coordinator, and there's been some changes in Detroit over the last 6 months. What would you say is the identity of this offense when you look at them, you know, broad strokes?
Well, I think they're trying to develop a more balanced identity. That was clear watching them against Oakland, which was the second week for, I believe, for the new coordinator. They ran the ball. They came out running the ball. They ran it with Abdullah, who I really like his skill set. They ran it with Joik Bell. They even gave Theo Riddick carries. I think they're trying to become a more balanced offense. Now, having said that, they're also really multiple with their formations, with players in basically their four main receivers would be the three wideouts, Calvin Johnson, Golden Tate, Lance Moore, and Eric Ebron, all can line up any place in the formation.
Right.
So they're very, very multiple with their pass game and with their looks. But I think they really understand, and I think you see that in the NFL, that at some point you have to line up and run the football.
Sure.
And they were so bad for much of this season that they just couldn't function offensively.
How much of that would you say is on their offensive line? That's why I wanted to ask you next, is what their line has been like in your
eyes. You know, they're starting the rookie from Duke, Tomlinson, who's a better run blocker than pass protector at this point in his career, and he's got a little edge to him. I think Riley Reiff is probably a better run blocker as well. They started Michael Ola at right tackle last week due to injury. I don't know if he goes again. I would assume he'll go again on Thursday night. He's been around the league. He originally was from Canada, played in Canada. I think they're at this point probably better run blockers than pass protectors. I mean, I think if you get them in passing situations, if the Eagles get them in passing situations, I think both Reef and Ola are susceptible to speed to power rushes. And I think that Barwin and Graham could have some success with speed to power rushes against them.
Interesting. Well, that would be something to watch for sure. Going in the other side of the ball, defensively, I feel like this unit, anytime I've watched them, I've been pretty impressed with this front four. And it's a group we've talked about in the past. They're long, they're athletic, they come off the ball well.
They're deep, too. They play a lot of players.
Yeah, they do. They have a nice rotation going, and they can line those guys up in a number of different spots as well.
Yeah, this is a tough matchup for the Eagles' whole line. I really believe that. I mean, Jones is he's their version of Michael Bennett, Seattle's really excellent DN/D tackle. Jones can line up in both spots. And Ziggy Ansah is really athletic. He has excellent closing speed. They use him as a joker at times where he lines up in a stand-up position and you don't know exactly where he's coming from. They still have Haloti Ngata, who I've seen with the bull rush this year, just push people back. This will be a very interesting matchup for the Eagles guards in this game.
Yep.
You know, this is a tough day at the office.
Yeah.
I mean,
Caron Reed as well has made some plays for Princeton.
Devin Taylor is close to 6'8". Yeah. I mean, you know, their nickel, when they go to their nickel D-line, and they won't play these four on every snap because they have a lot of depth. But if you have Taylor at close to 6'8 at one D end, Ansah 6'5 with great athleticism at the other, Jones, who's 6'5 and really athletic inside with Ngata, who can still move people, that's a tough group.
Yeah, no question about it. And then you look at the linebacking core, a group we've talked about in the past. Stephen Tulloch, I think, is probably one of the more reliable players in this position in the game. Very good tackler inside. Tahir Whitehead from Temple.
Yeah.
He's played a little bit more in terms of nickel and subgroups this year as opposed to in base as much. But a very interesting group inside as well.
Yeah, and what they've done over the last couple of games is they kind of rotate the two you mentioned with Josh Bynes, and that's sort of their nickel group.
Yep.
You know, so they mix and match with those three. And Josh Bynes has been a way more productive pro than I thought he was going to be coming out of Auburn.
Right.
You know, I thought he'd be a really nice special teams player and a kind of a backup linebacker. He's proven in Detroit that he can play meaningful snaps in your sub packages, even in your base, and be a productive player. So I think their front seven is a pretty good group. It's probably their back end that you feel like you can attack a little bit.
So then lastly, we're here, the secondary. What has been your thinking? Darius Slay is a guy I remember I liked a lot coming out of Mississippi State.
He's improving.
Seems like he's come along a little bit.
They matched him up on Cooper this week. He did a good job, Amari Cooper. He's their best corner, clearly, because obviously Mathis is out for the year. So, you know, as I mentioned at the top of the podcast, you know, I think you have to look at Quandre Diggs in the slot, and you have to look at Nigel Lawson on the outside, on the other side opposite Slay, and you have to feel that we can attack those players. And I think that's the mentality, in all honesty, the Eagles have to take at various points in the game, not just run, you know, specific concepts and, you know, here's our plays, we run them, but say, hey, you know what? We can attack Nigel Lawson.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to watch. I'm excited to see this matchup. Greg Cosell, appreciate the time, as always, here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. We will talk to you next week.
Thanks, Fran.
More great stuff from Greg Cosell. Love having him here each and every week to break down the Eagles and their upcoming opponent. But before we move into the rest of the show, let's talk a little bit about iTunes. BT, you've been checking in on the ratings and the comments. How are things looking this week?
We've got some good comments, people sending in their thoughts for the show, which is always great because we love to have your feedback, and we obviously want to tailor the show to what you guys like. So keep sending in your stuff, and this, I think, will make this the week.
This will be the week.
So if you send in a comment and a question for the show, we'll possibly send you some swag. We'll make that Chris Stevens. We'll make that
Chris Stevens. We'll be on it.
Yep.
That is what. So this is what we're laying it out right now. You go on to iTunes, go on to Stitcher, go wherever it is that you listen, wherever, go find the podcast, like it, rate it,
subscribe.
So obviously subscribe. If you're not already, comment with a question. Question for the show, so that we can answer it on the show, and then we will send you some swag. So,
and spend some time, give us a little thought with this question.
Exactly.
You know, let's
we're gonna
really
pick the best
to
one.
Exactly. So we're really gonna go through these, and so I need people to really go hard on this.
We've been
pretty consistent
getting some comments each week, so I want to pick the best one. So you go on if you've got a good question.
Occupy your mother. I know you're listening.
We're setting it out there for you guys, and we had Anthony Russomano last week. I didn't forget about you. Exactly right. So go on, leave us a good question, leave us a good comment. We will answer it, and you will get some swag. I mean, it doesn't get any better than
that.
It's
a win-win.
It's a good holiday stocking stuffer.
I'm dabbing. Like,
there we go. You're dabbing. There we go. All right. So let's keep the ball rolling here. Another great conversation with a former Eagle. This time we've got Mike Quick on the line. We're going to talk about beating press coverage from the wide receiver position.
Time to get inside the mind of a player. It's time for Two Technique.
Joining me this week on Two Technique for the very first time on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast, former Eagles wide receiver Mike Quick, analyst for Eagles Game Plan, color commentator with the great, the legendary Merrill Reese. Mike, welcome to the show. I know that you're a busy man, so I appreciate the time.
No problem, friend. I'm happy to be on Two Technique.
All right, well, let's get to it. Well, the topic I want to talk to you about this week is getting off press coverage and what that means for a wide receiver. What are the different technique points that go into defeating press coverage if you're a receiver with a cornerback right in your face at the line of scrimmage?
Who? Well, first thing, when a wide receiver gets a corner in his face, he's first has to realize his objective. Where does he want to get to? And so that determines in large part to how you want to release, how you want to get your release. Do I have to get to the inside of this guy? Do I have to fight to get to the outside? Because you have to know how that's going to affect the rest of the play, whether it's an inside release, outside release. And if you're going to use an arm over technique where you're going to swim a guy, if you're just going to use your forearm and just make sure you beat his hands off of you, or if you're just going to stutter, use quick feet, stutter step him, and work to the inside to get even on him, work to the outside to get even on him, and then do whatever you need to do, have to do, whatever your plan is once you get even with that guy or on top of that guy.
How much of it is feet versus hands?
I think it's mostly feet.
Okay.
But if you're not real swift of feet, you better be real strong in your hands and your ability to out-muscle a guy who's trying to press cover you. You've got to have one or the other, and if you've got both, well, that's the guy that you really want out there defeating press coverage, a guy who has outstanding feet as well as strong upper body and is able to swim guys or beat his hands off of you and get even with that guy so he's at your will.
So then the last question is, how much of it can you teach and how much of it is something that some guys, obviously, we just saw Mike Evans this past week, big, strong guy, can run through that contact.
Sure.
But how much of it is something that you can really develop and bring a guy along?
Well, a lot of it you can develop. And a lot of it is just willing and someone who knows how to properly teach a guy, how to keep a guy's hands off of you, how to keep the space and get to where you want to get to. First of all, friend, it has to be in your head. What's my objective? What do I need to do? How do I need to set this guy up to be successful, to get to where I need to get to make this play successful?
Great stuff there from Mike. He did a great job breaking down beating press coverage for you. So I'm going to quickly break down how to subscribe to a podcast. All you have to do, go to your favorite device, whether it's your Apple TV, your laptop, your smartphone, find your native podcast app, search for the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast, hit subscribe. The show comes to your phone, comes to your laptop every single week. Free of charge. You don't have to do anything. It shows up. All you have to do is listen, and you can listen at your leisure whenever you want. It's the best thing in the world. I love subscribing to podcasts. We have a ton of different podcast offerings for you guys to subscribe to, whether it's this one. You've got the Eagles Insider podcast.
Yeah.
You've got the Journey to the Draft podcast.
Yeah.
You've got the podcast with myself and Ross Tucker. breaking down college football, the college draft podcast. We're going to be prepping you for the NFL draft coming up. We have Mike Mayock on this week.
And this is a great time to check out this college football stuff because, like you said, it's rivalry week, and this is when a lot of those great matchups happen and good stuff in the end of football season.
Yeah, so. Okay. The opportunities.
I love rivalry. I can't wait for this weekend.
Oh, yeah. We're going to get into it. Pump the brakes here a little bit. We got some time because guess what? It's time. It's time for Saturday Scouting.
It's time for Saturday Scouting.
Listen, we decided this week that we weren't going to have a guest. Why? It's a short week. Sure, that has something to do with it. But also, it's rivalry week here in college football. There are a ton of big matchups for some of these teams that aren't going to a bowl. This is the last chance for some of these senior prospects, some of these juniors that are going to declare for the draft. This is their last chance to put something on tape. We said it earlier. You are what you put on tape. This is what these prospects now have. It's their last chance to put something on tape for NFL evaluators. Really excited about a lot of these matchups this week.
Speaking of putting things on tape, what matchups? Talk about them. What do we have this week?
Well, I would say that, you know, you look at a bunch of different positions, okay? And let's look at the quarterback position. All right, so the first name, and BT's got some lists.
Christian Hackenberg versus Michigan State. How do you feel about Christian Hackenberg? I don't know what the.
All right, ultimately how I feel about Christian Hackenberg, okay? He's a big kid. He's got exceptional arm talent, probably one of the best in the draft in terms of just natural arm talent, the ability to stretch the field vertically. He has great velocity. He's able to put everything he's got into a throw with very, very minimal action. You know, flick of the wrist, and he's able to deliver the ball. Now, the problem is that he showed a lot in terms of operating in the pocket last year, being able to step into pressure and deliver the football. Wasn't always pretty. Faced a ton of pressure last year, and there were times where he did look bad. But I can remember some opportunities even against Boston College in that bowl game, their last game of the year, where he stepped up into the face of the fire, stepped into the fan, and delivered a ball with a defender bearing down, showed the ability to throw with anticipation, showed a lot of different things. The problem is that he's always been a bit erratic, and it's gotten worse this year to the point where, you know, now you're just questioning whether or not it's ever going to get fixed. And the other problem is in that I saw this week one against Temple. He got sacked 10 times in that game. He looked a little shell-shocked. And that's something where you have to question. It's almost like that David Carr syndrome from when he was the first couple years with the Houston Texans, where does a guy ever rebound from that? And he's in a situation that system at Penn State is not ideal for him. It's, you know, because you have a quarterback that's not naturally accurate, and you're asking him to throw a lot of quick slants, a lot of screens. So many I would say like once or twice a game, he turns to throw a screen pass and he airmails it into the stands or he puts it into the dirt. I mean, he's just not a naturally accurate guy. But then, you know, you run a playoff play action, he steps back in a seven-step drop, and he'll crossing route, you know, 27 yards down the field to the opposite hash with beautiful touch and beautiful placement. It's like, unbelievable. That's the thing, is you've got a guy that can do that not many quarterbacks, even in the NFL, can make throws that way. So I think ultimately it's going to come down to how well he impresses teams. If he does decide to come out, I'm assuming, you know, we talked to Tony Pauline pretty consistently. He's pretty sure he's going to come out. So we're going to see what happens there. But I think it's pretty clear he's probably not going to be a high pick. Probably not going to be a high pick. I think he's got all the ability in the world. So I would still consider myself a fan of Christian Hackenberg and what he can be down the line.
It was earlier in the year, but you brought it up. I watched that Temple game, and he looked – I mean, shell shock is a great word. And yeah. So I remember thinking – okay, it's first game of the year, you know, obviously, you know, they play Temple. I don't know whether they didn't take it serious, whatever it is.
Right.
I was just really surprised to see him, especially in the second half of that game. It just didn't seem like he had, I don't want to say a lot of resolve, but he seemed like he was definitely fading down.
No question.
So looking at some other ones, Ezekiel Elliott versus James Ross and Desmond Morgan.
Yeah, so you have that Ohio State-Michigan game. Obviously, one of the biggest things. And Ezekiel Elliott is in the news right now. Because of what happened last week.
Great comments.
And he apologized for them today. Earlier today, he put a statement out on his Twitter account using his notes screen grab. Love that. I'm a big fan of that.
That's how you know he cares when he took a screen grab of his notes.
Yeah. So, look, he is, and we've talked about Elliott in the past. I think he's the complete package at the running back position. He does everything well. Not a ton of negative traits in his game. Really excited about what he can be at the next level. I think he's a first-round pick, talent-wise. I'll be interested to see how much teams make of this, the transgression, because there's never been any negative remark on Ezekiel Elliott before Saturday. So now, you know, he comes out, it was a tough loss, and they've had a lot of issues offensively over the course of the year. And he called out the coaches, he called out the play calling, he called out the scheme, he called out everything that they, you know, that they were doing offensively, laid it all out there, declared for the draft, you know, you know, with two games left. I mean, just to,
I don't like this, I don't like that, I don't like this, and I'm leaving.
And I'm out. You know, peace, I'm out. You know, I mean, it was, look, it was very frustrating, emotional. He's 20 years old. I mean, it is what it is.
The one thing this will do is this will open the can of worms about his attitude and, sure, and who he is, because he now has given them something.
That's you open the door.
Exactly. He would have never opened the door, but I know Chris Stevens is a big fan of Ezekiel Elliott.
Is he? Oh, yeah. There you go.
So looking forward, Alex Collins, running back from Arkansas versus Kentrell Brothers.
Yeah, so Kentrell Brothers is one of the top linebackers in the SEC out of Missouri. Not the most athletic guy, but physical, instinctive guy inside. One of those classic thumpers at middle linebacker. Consistently has been one of the most productive linebackers as well in the entire country. And Alex Collins, look, is one of the more impressive running backs you're going to see, not just in the SEC, but in the country. He's got the ability to get downhill quickly. He's got a good burst. He's physical. One of the best blocking running backs as well that you're going to find. I've said in the past that he really reminds me of a Chris Ivory, who's now with the New York Jets, previously with New Orleans Saints. Reminds me in terms of his running style.
Yeah.
It's funny that ball security has been an issue with him as well.
I was just going to say, he fumbles. He fumbled against LSU. Yep. That.
Fumbles have been an issue with him in the past. And Brett Bielema has had some interesting things to say about him as well. And I always like reading what here's one of the things, and actually I was talking about this with Greg Cosell during the game on Sunday. I love hearing what coaches say about players, about players on the team. But then also, I love hearing what players, what teammates say about each other. So, like, let's say I like hearing what a linebacker says about their starting quarterback. I like hearing what a safety says about, the receiver on the other side. I like hearing about, because obviously they go
match
against
up,
each
they
other.
They match up all day. So all they day. See each other all the time, so they know tendencies and kind of who they are on the field.
And you hear the leadership end of it, too. You know, if a guy says, oh, he's one of the leaders of the team and he's right. in a different unit, it has a little bit extra merit. So hearing Bielema talk about Alex Collins, just how he's got to continue to put everything together, hasn't done it yet. Really is just kind of disappointing how he's developed in that way. It's very interesting to see. I know he was suspended, for like a half, didn't start a couple games here and there. That's been an issue with him as well. So we'll see how that takes place moving forward.
All right, another one here. Ricky Seals-Jones and Josh Reynolds versus Tre'Davious White.
Well, White is one of the most talented corners in the country. A guy that I loved the first time I watched him. He's a junior from LSU. Really, really big fan. He's got good size. Not great size, but he's got good size. He's scrappy. He's athletic. He's instinctive. He's very aggressive. I think, and I haven't studied the game yet, but a lot of people have said that he had issues with Laquon Treadwell last week in the Ole Miss game. Interested to go back and watch it, because when I watched them last year, I thought White absolutely came on top in that matchup. So excited to go back and dig deeper into that. But and then you look at the Texas A&M group. I highlighted Ricky Seals-Jones, who, this might be a little bit of a hot take. I don't know if we've got a drop for a hot take on the Eagles Insider or on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast, but here we go. There it is. I kind of think Ricky Seals-Jones might be a tight end at the next level.
Really?
I think he might be a tight end. I don't think he's a wide receiver.
What makes you say that?
I just don't think he runs well. And here's the thing,
he's a big body, though.
He's a very big body.
He is a big body. And the one thing I know is he catches the ball
away from his frame.
Away from his frame. I cannot tell you how much that bothers me.
Although I saw a lot of drops when I watched him last year. And he's not a good route runner. When you see a guy that...
You're selling me him.
I know. Well, that's what I mean.
He drops it. He's really not a good route runner.
That's what I mean. And he's not
other
a
than
great,
that, I love him.
And he's not explosive. Like, he's not a guy... He didn't look to me like a great athlete. Like, he was... I think he was listed like 235 or something like that last year, which is... That's really, really, really big for a wide receiver. He looked like he was 245. Like, just the way that he ran, he looked like a tight end. Now, last year, if you had asked me about Laquon Treadwell, I would have said, looked like a nice player, really good at the catch point, but I wasn't impressed with how he ran. He was 230 pounds, so he didn't look really explosive. He didn't look like a natural mover. He lost 18 pounds this offseason. He got the injury, broke his leg, lost 18 pounds this offseason. Looks much more fluid, looks much more athletic this year, and that helped. We'll see if Ricky Seals-Jones does that moving forward. They've got a very talented, very deep wide receiving core. We talked about, we put up Reynolds in there, Speedy Noyle. They've got a number of freshmen and sophomore wideouts as well that are making plays for them. So if Ricky Seals-Jones isn't working out, there are plenty of guys right next to him or right behind him that are willing to step up and make plays. So I don't know how many opportunities he's going to get.
And this is something I'm just discovering in the last 5 or 6 years, really, really watching college football with a keen eye, is that there's guys who look good on teams that have schemes that fit them.
Right.
Which, you know, I mean, and obviously college, you're going against superior sure. talent sometimes, inferior talent sometimes. But there's guys that you're like, oh, man, he's definitely going to translate. Da-da. And then you see him in the next level and you're like, why didn't the guy? And then sometimes it's just the fit of where he was really elevated his play.
Sure. And that's going to be, I'll be interested to see, watch him develop, because he's a junior this year, Ricky Seals-Jones. I'm assuming he's going to go back to school unless he's going to switch to tight end this year and make it for coming out of the draft that way.
Funches.
Yeah, that's the thing. I know
Funches looked good too.
I thought Funches moved well for well enough to be a receiver. I don't think that with Ricky Seals-Jones. So we'll see.
Cool. All right, going forward, Jarrell Adams versus Jayron Kearse. What can you tell us?
Jarrell Adams, senior tight end, athletic, has moved all over the formation for the Gamecocks, going up against against Jayron Kearse, who is the nephew of the Freak, Javon Kearse.
It's funny, I'm looking at this name and I'm like, is this guy related to Javon Kearse? Because this name is really serious. Jayron Kearse.
Well, so Eagles fans are just going to be obsessed with him. Why?
Is he a freak?
Name one reason why they're going to be obsessed with him. Obviously related to the Freak. Okay, so a former Eagle, anytime you get that relation, fine.
Yeah.
He's also a safety from Clemson.
Oh, here we go.
So
next Dawkins coming
right,
out.
All right, so now this kid is like 6'4", 215. Like, ridiculous size for a safety. I mean, he might be even 220, 225. I mean, he's got ridiculous size
that's
for the
like
position.
Perfect.
But he's a really big body, and he's got a great burst in a straight line. I don't know how athletic he is in terms of his quickness and change of direction. The little that I've watched of him, that was the question that I came away wondering. Now he's going to go up against the tight end at times in Jarrell Adams in South Carolina, who, again, is one of those athletic movement type pieces. A lot of people see as is a big wide receiver or a smaller tight end. I think he was 218 or something like that coming into the year. I mean, definitely on the smaller side for a tight end. So he'll give him some problems here. So I'm interested to see that matchup when I go back and study both of those guys.
And then last one here, Zach Banner versus Deion Hollins.
Yeah, so Deion Hollins is one of the most talented pass rushers, I would say, in the country in terms of just natural ability. I remember watching last year Oumabe Odighizuwa against Virginia, week one of 2014. And Deion Hollins made a lot of plays in that game. And I remember writing down, hey, this Hollins kid looks pretty interesting. While I was studying Odighizuwa, he really flashed. There's two guys along that defensive front that I'm really high on. Hollins, I think, is a nice player. I'm not 100% in love with him, but a nice player, can bend the edge, has some athleticism to him, can drop into coverage, shows how to use his hands. I mean, he's got some traits that you like. I love Kenny Clark, the defensive tackle there. He does a lot of really good things with his hands, really patient, and shows the ability to two-gap. Just a very smart player. I really like Kenny Clark. And Zach Banner, and then you look at this USC offensive line. They've had their share of issues. Banner is just enormous. He played last year, I want to say he was 385. Like, just ridiculous. Wow. But he played basketball.
Was he McGowan from Baylor?
Yeah, who plays a 4'10". But this kid played basketball at USC.
He's got some athleticism.
He's got some athleticism.
I'm sure he has Greg Osella. He must be a dancing bear.
Yeah, well, that's what people are going to call him that. And, I think he dropped weight. I think he was down at 355 or 360 at the start of the season.
That's insane.
Even last year, like I said, at 380, he showed some natural athleticism. I think he's got pretty light feet for a 380-pound guy, and really, really successful at moving people, obviously, at that size. You try and bull rush him, you're not doing anything against this guy. So it'll be an interesting matchup, those two, because Hollins typically lines up over the right tackle. That's where Banner typically plays, is that right tackle. That'll be an interesting one-on-one.
I'm going to give you a matchup.
All right, here we go.
To watch this
week. What do you got?
I watched Jared Goff.
Okay.
Last week against
Stanford.
What
do you think? Let me hear it. What do you got? You like Jared Goff?
I like him.
Okay.
I like him. I'm not saying I want to, I don't want to, whether a draft
sure.
or whatever, but just
the
watching.
The latest I heard from Tony Pauline was 50-50 on him coming out.
50-50. Okay. There's certainly some things that he can work. I like him more than Christian Hackenberg. I can
say
that.
That's fair.
But I watched the Stanford versus Cal.
Yep.
And McShay was doing the sideline. Todd McShay was who's come on and done some stuff with us.
Sure.
He made some NFL throws. Now, he wasn't doing it consistently. He wasn't, he wasn't like a top level
right.
passer. But he made some throws. He keeps his feet moving, which is really impressive. He keeps his feet moving a lot like Peyton Manning. And I'm not saying he is Peyton Manning, but he's always, his feet are real choppy, and he's never getting himself kind of stuck in place. And he's real, he's more mobile than I expect him to be. Very strong arm. He's just going to have to do it more consistent.
Yeah, Goff is intriguing.
So, I mean, from what I saw, so they're playing against Arizona State. Obviously not a really big matchup, but he's definitely a guy to watch out for because he's going to be getting a lot of – he's going to be a top five pick most likely. Somewhere in
you
that range because he's quarterback.
Top 10, you know, you would assume.
He intrigues me, so I like to check out the game. But there's some good matchups to watch this week.
Yeah, Arizona State's got a couple of guys too. I think Lloyd Carrington, the corner, I think will be at the Shrine game if I'm not mistaken. I know that I just heard his name recently. I did watch him. I wasn't over the moon about the kid, but bigger kid that's got some length to him. And then the safety, Jordan Simone, I think he's got some ability as well. Looks like he kind of profiles as really as like one of those Chris Maragos type players in the next level where, you know, maybe he's not a full-time starter, but you just can see he's got the temperament to play at special teams, can do a couple different things for you in the secondary because he's got a little bit of athleticism to him. Jordan Simone has that kind of build. So he's got some players in the secondary there for Arizona State. And Cal has been on the downslide a little bit. After Goff had that initial buzz early in the year and everyone said, oh, number one pick. They lost like four straight, and I'm not exactly sure where that skid ended, but they've had some issues, I know for sure. So good stuff there from BT. I think it's time to wrap the show up. Another show here in the books here for the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. For my man BT and Chris Stevens, I'm Fran Duffy. We'll talk to you next week.